So that allowed us to then go out in the market with confidence and acquire our first facility in 2020. And so since then, we've acquired 14 here, soon to be 15, with one right behind that. So it'll maybe before this comes out, it'll be up to 16 facilities across 7 states.
This is your daily real estate syndication show. I'm your host, Whitney Sewell. Today, our guest is Tom Dunkel. He's a managing director and chief investment officer of Bellrose Storage Group, focused on Eastern U.S. Underperforming real estate, a background in corporate finance and 30 years of real estate investing experience. He was a president at Elbow Holdings for 17 years. He's in Wayne, Pennsylvania. And so Tom dives into, you know, a number of things, or actually this specific method that he uses for passive investing. And I think it's a great method, I think, for any passive investor, just a simple checklist to go through that's going to bring out more questions potentially, or at least red flags before you invest your hard-earned money. Welcome to the show. Honored to have you on and us dive into self-storage and the business and all these things that listeners have questions about, including myself, right? And I know you're an expert in. I want to learn how you all operate and do it so well. So welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Whitney, and all the listeners. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Well, Tom, you have been in finance or real estate for many years and very experienced, and so grateful again for your time. Give us a high level, some of those steps you used to get to where you're at today, and maybe something you wish you had known 20 years ago.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm well into my 50s now, so it's always dangerous to just give me kind of an open-ended question with the mic, because I could go on and on and on. I'm tending to get a little long-winded in my old age, Whitney. But no, I came out of business school down there in Virginia, where you are, at the College of William and Mary. And started out in the aerospace industry doing mergers and acquisitions and corporate finance stuff. And man, it was a really phenomenal foundation for my kind of my financial management and my investment just development, right? The experience that I gained there just really helped me to build a great foundation, right? I was working with Harvard MBAs, Wharton MBAs, ex-Marines, ex-fighter pilots, astronauts. I mean, it was really quite amazing. Fast forward to 2006, I had been doing corporate finance stuff here and there. I had moved back to the Philly area where I'm from. And 2006, that fateful day came when I got fired from my corporate job. And it was the third time I had lost a job in the past 4 years. And I was like, all right. Something's got to change here, the old Albert Einstein, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results, then you're a little cuckoo. So I was like, hey, let's take this opportunity. The universe is kicking me in the pants to finally go out and do what I feel like I was put on this earth to do, which is go out and do my own thing and build a company or a few companies along the way. So of course it was 2006. Jump into the real estate industry. And just, of course, that was right before the Great Recession. And I proceeded to get creamed pretty good those first few years. So learned a lot of hard lessons, had to do a lot of soul searching, looking in the mirror, looking at my young family, trying to make sure that, I was going to keep things together and not have a total disaster. So anyway, just learned, persevered, kept at it, got gritty, got educated, just kept grinding. And thankfully today, that's 18 years ago, I've been able to build a couple of really terrific businesses. I've had some businesses that have failed for sure. But those couple of wins have really helped to propel me and my family and those around me. And it's been a great experience. I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's awesome. It's interesting. You mentioned a couple of businesses that failed. Hey, but you kept going, right? You found something else that did work. What was something during those times? It's like that kept you going to start another business, right? I think it's hard on the whole family, right? The spouse as well, and you emotionally and them, and so give us just a little insight there for the listener who's maybe on the verge of a business that's failing, but there's still light at the end of the tunnel.
Sure. Yeah. It was an interesting, almost surreal experience because when I got fired in 2006 and I was looking around for something entrepreneurial, like I said, I had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old at home. And so I was, the primary provider. So I needed to make sure I got something going. So to kind of hedge my bet, I did go on some interviews for some corporate jobs. And this one job in particular, and this one interview in particular, like if you had seen me at that time, Whitney, and you had kind of looked at my experience, what I was good at, and you looked at the job description for this particular opportunity, you would have been like, ah, this is perfect for Tom, right? He's going to be able to use his M&A experience. It's a global, big private equity backed, pre-IPO, like all that stuff. I'm in the interview, and by the way, a big compensation package as well. So I'm in the interview, across from the guy, and I swear, in the back of my head, I hear a voice just saying, "Don't do it. Don't do it. This is not the path for you. This is not the path. Do not do this." So I get home from the interview. I call the recruiter. I say, "Hey, I'm sorry, but I'm pulling my name from consideration for this position, because I just have to go and do this entrepreneurial thing and see what I can make of it." And the recruiter says to me, he says, "You're their guy, right?" In other words, it was my job if I wanted it. And I said, "I appreciate that, man, but I got to go for it." So it was just something. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I guess I'm just wired differently than some other people. I guess maybe a lot of entrepreneurs out there feel that same way. But that was a big turning point for sure.
Wow. No, that's interesting. Those decisions that change everything the rest of our lives, right? Whether we accepted that big position or decided to go do something even bigger, right?
At least the opportunity to do something bigger,
that's
right?
right. That's right.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you sharing that because I think we all have those decisions that we have to make, right? And whether we're gonna Man, yeah, I don't
Sure.
know. I've had to do that a number of times myself, and especially becoming an entrepreneur and leaving that what we think or
Of course.
taught, that secure job, right?
That's
To go
right.
see if you can actually go make something. But no, I
That's
appreciate you
right.
sharing, Tom. But today you are highly focused on self-storage, right?
Yes, sir.
Give us a little overview, of the business now, your all's focus, maybe the markets that you all are in as well.
Sure. Yeah. So, we started looking at self-storage as an asset class, probably around 2017, 2018. Just a short bit of background, just so you know. But when we came out of the Great Recession, I partnered up with Joe Downs. We've been business partners now for 14 years, and our first business was distressed mortgage debt business, which is called U.S. Mortgage Resolution, and that business has done really well over the years, generating over $55, $56 million of revenue over this time period. So that has allowed us to do some other things, right? So we looked at hard money lending, we looked at flipping houses, we looked at multifamily, we looked at being partners in a title company, we looked at all these things kind of in and around real estate, and we tried some of them. And those were some of the businesses I mentioned earlier where we failed, right? But 2017, we started hearing about self-storage. 2018, we start going to the conferences, getting educated, learning more, going deep, doing the reading, doing the research. 2019, we joined a self-storage mastermind group, and through that process, we realized we had some gaps in our team, right? So Joe and I are pretty solid on the financial side of things. We can analyze the deals, we can get the deals funded, we can get them closed. But we were missing kind of the front end and the back end. We were missing the lead generation aspect because, of course, in real estate, finding those off-market deals is super critical. And then on the back end, once you buy the thing, now you gotta run it, right? So we didn't have that operations experience either. So through our mastermind network, we were able to plug those two big holes in our team. And so that allowed us to then go out in the market with confidence and acquire our first facility in 2020. And so since then, we've acquired 14 here, soon to be 15, with one right behind that. So it'll maybe before this comes out, it'll be up to 16 facilities. across seven states. So we're big fans of self-storage. Happy to take a breath here and get into kind of the what we our investment thesis and what we like about it. But I'll take a breath.
That's incredible. It sounds like you all had a big experience in real estate, right, and finance, and but even joining a mastermind, you all got around other people who were doing it, right, and realized there were some holes that you needed to fill. And I think joining some groups like that have been massive. Just pivots for me, right? In a good way.
Totally.
Right. Meeting people. And you know, we've partnered with people 4 and 5 years later who I met at a mastermind, right? Many years before. Right. And so it's incredible to see those relationships, and you got to be willing to go out there and sometimes even pay for those groups, you know, to be a part and willing to do that. But let's jump into some of the methods that you all use or some due diligence practices. And you and I were talking about that a little bit beforehand. I want to make sure we have time to dive in there on some of that, because I feel like that's going to be helpful for the listeners.
Sure. Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. Big fan of joining those mastermind groups and such. But so before we hit record here, I guess we were talking about a due diligence framework that we've developed here internally at Bellrose Storage Group that we have since turned into an ebook to help investors out there analyze their alternative investment opportunities. And it really came about through our own successes and failures and deals that we had looked at over the years. And we said, hey, you know, we should really put this down on paper to help other people, especially people who are maybe looking at alternative investments for the first time and they're just not sure where to start. Like, it's easy, it's pretty easy to analyze a stock, right? If you go on any of the, you know, stock websites, like they've got research reports and all this stuff all over the place. It's a little more challenging in the alternative world. So we developed this framework and we call it the SAFE method, S-A-F-E. It's an acronym where it's just really a series of questions in each one of these categories. So S stands for sponsor. You really need to get to know who you are doing business with. And unfortunately, this is a big mistake I see a lot of high net worth investors make, is they skip over this sponsor step because it's somebody that they were referred to or somebody they saw that had a great ad on Facebook or LinkedIn or their video looked great. And that's awesome. And we do that too. But you need to really get to know that person, because if you're going to be handing over your hard-earned cash, you got to know where it's going. So we have a whole list of questions about, you know, how to really get to know and vet your sponsor.
Maybe give us one or two of those questions that you'd recommend. You got to ask this, or a good way to get to know them.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, what is your track record? And not just your track record generally, what is your track record in this specific asset class or type of deal? And they should be super transparent to share with you, you know, pretty much whatever you want. If you want to do a background check on them, they should be open to that. I mean, we're an open book here at Bellrose Storage Group because, you know, we've been investors, we are investors, and we take very seriously the obligation and the responsibility of taking investor money. So we're an open book. We share whatever people want to see. And so if you're a sponsor, doesn't give you that same level of transparency and candor, you might want to, go find another sponsor would be my suggestion.
I would agree. I would agree. All right. What is
A? And just as simple, something simple, Whitney, is Googling. Google the principles, Google the company. And then, you know, don't just look at the first page, you know, kind of scroll back through, like, you know, there might be something, you know, might find a lawsuit or something, but you have to go back to page 5 of the Google search or something. Ask me how I know this. Personal experience. I had money stolen from me from a guy that, had I Googled him, I would have seen all this bad stuff about him. In my defense, though, this was a good maybe 10 plus years ago when Google was not as prevalent as it is today. So, but anyway, it was a hard lesson that I hope somebody out there saves $50,000 by just Googling your sponsor's name.
It seems so simple, right? But so much is online now.
Yep. And the guy was super charming. He had a great, you know, conceptually the business model made a ton of sense. He told great stories. We had a lot of laughs. It's like, oh, okay.
Did he play the guitar? Great.
He didn't play the guitar, but he did have like a little recording studio. Anyway,
inside joke for Tom. Just kidding. All right, Tom, what's A?
A stands for asset. What is it exactly that you're investing in? So if, a lot of times when you're investing in a syndication, you know, you're buying membership interests in an LLC that owns a particular asset, right? And that's important to know because some people say, oh, well, can I 1031 exchange into a syndication? Not that way. You can probably do, you can structure it a little differently and you can, but you're becoming basically an owner of a business. You're buying stock, if you will, in a LLC that owns this asset. I would love for someone who's out there, you know, buying Dogecoin or something, like, what is the asset you are investing in? Because I haven't figured that one out yet. But it's important not only know the asset, but okay, so now you're part owner of this business that owns this property. Okay, well, where is it? You know, what's that market like? What are the demographics? Is the population growing? Is it declining? Is it steady? You know, what kind of area is it in? Is it in like is it in a nice area? Is it in a, you know, crime-ridden area? You know, so you got to know kind of where your money is going, and then how is the value of that asset impacted, and what is the strategy for increasing that value over time so that you as an investor can get your return.
No doubt. The asset is very important. And I appreciate, though, even the order of these so far, the sponsor first.
Totally. Right?
Even before the asset. And so, all right, yeah. Let's keep going.
So F is for financials. You want to review the financials. And even if you're not a numbers person, you at least want to look at them and make sure that, you know, like the revenue isn't like a big hockey stick projection, right? Like, oh, well, the self-storage facilities throwing off 300,000 this year, but next year, because we're magicians and we can pull things out of hats, you know, it's going to be 600,000. Well, that just doesn't pass muster. So, and that's one thing I learned a long time ago when I was in the aerospace world and we were raising money from private equity firms and big banks and such. I mean, I learned really early on in my career, it's best to be very kind of tempered in your projections and your expectations. Make sure those are numbers that are achievable, reasonable, achievable, and really beatable, right? Because we want to under promise and over deliver. There are sponsors out there who do the opposite. They over promise and under deliver. And then, which I don't understand that business model, because like we're looking to build partnerships with our investors. And the worst thing you can do is to over promise and under deliver, because then you're that investor is going to be gone. And it'll be tough to get them back. And we do a lot of hard work to build and get to know our investor database. So, you know, we really try to do the right thing there for sure.
Love that. I love how you just said, hey, it's, you don't have to be a financial guru, right? Mm-hmm. But if you just know a couple things to look for, at least it will prompt more questions, right?
That's right.
And you know, if you had, you know, somebody that's brand new to underwriting that's listening, what would you say? Hey, at least know this or look at these one, you know, this one or two things. What would you say?
Yeah, sure. I would say, like I touched on, just unrealistic growth of revenue, maybe unrealistic reduction in expenses. Because let's face it, I mean, it costs money to make money, right? It costs money to run a business. You have to have people, you know, and of course, there's things you have no control over, right? Or little control over, property taxes, insurance, utilities. I mean, those things are tough to manage, but you know, here at Belrose Storage Group, we implement technology to execute our value add strategies. So a lot of times when we acquire a self-storage facility, the expenses actually increase because we're adding some of these technology aspects. And now over time, you know, of course, we're investing that money to get the revenue up going. And so over time, it becomes a more reasonable operating expense ratio. Sorry to throw out big finance terms there, but I would say, you know, just as long as there's, you don't see any big jumps in numbers, if you're not a numbers person, I would say that's something that's kind of a red flag to look out for sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because it's I know you know, when passive investing, you know, myself as well, it's like if they go with multifamily, if they're saying 2.5-3% rent growth for 2 years, then all of a sudden there's 5%. I'm like, okay, what's happened, right? Mm-hmm. Why that then? What are you expecting to be able to accomplish during this time? You
That's
know,
right.
It just allows you to ask more questions at least, right?
That's right.
And probably yeah, dig a little bit deeper than maybe you would have. And so, okay, the E.
Yeah. E, yeah. So E is for exit, right? So how do you get out of this thing? It's not like you can go to Schwab.com and click, click, click and sell your position in your Belrose Storage Group syndication deal. It just doesn't work that way. So as an informed investor, you need to be able to go into a deal understanding that your money is going to be tied up for some period of time. Whether it's if it's kind of a quick value add deal, maybe it's 2 to 3 years. If there's a little more to the project, maybe there's a development aspect or an expansion aspect or some kind of lease up has to happen, you know, then you're looking at maybe 3, 4, 5 years, depending. But you want to go into that eyes wide open because, you know, if you have a big, college tuition payment coming up next year, you can't have your money tied up in a syndication deal. So you just got to know that going in. And the other thing that's important about exit is how is that exit going to come about? Are they selling the property? Are they refinancing the property? Meaning the sponsor. And have they executed on that kind of exit in the past? And then have they generated those kinds of returns that they're telling you they're going to return? Have they done that in the past? So those are all things to be conscious of with the exit. And then, of course, too, the good news, bad news about the exit, right? Good news is you're exiting. Hopefully you're making a nice return. But now you have what? You've got reinvestment risk. You've got cash that's come back to you. So you already have to be looking out for that next opportunity because that's a big challenge in alternative investments is what they call a cash drag, right? So you have an apartment deal where you get your money back. Well, you don't want to then start looking for your next deal because it could take, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And then that great, 12% return you got is now down to 6 because you've been sitting on cash that's until recently anyway, earning 0 in a savings or checking account. So there's definitely an active component to being a passive investor. And that's one of them.
No doubt about it. I appreciate your take on that as well. If you're not, it's almost like on the operator side too, if you're not constantly looking, like you don't know a deal when you see it,
100%.
Like on the passive investing side as well, it's like if you're not just kind of constantly taking in opportunities, you don't know a good opportunity when you see it. All right, so don't wait till you have that capital just sitting in the bank, is what Tom's saying, right?
That's right, and we do that on the investor side too, Whitney. We don't just raise capital when we have a deal, right? We're constantly out looking to build our investor community. And so we're always, putting value add information out and, nurturing and educating folks so that when a deal does come along, they can jump on it right away because they're educated. They know what we do. They know the kind of deal we're looking for. And when we find it, boom, they can jump right in.
Tom, it's incredible. I love just the just how basic that can sound or, is just breaking it down like that. Right. And if investors did just looked at just those thought through at least those four things, like they might've saved 50 grand, right.
That's right.
Or more. Sure. Right. So I appreciate just that method and thinking through it, laying it out like that. We're going to end this segment here, but I want the listeners to know, hey, Tom's going to be back for another segment. You're going to hear him again tomorrow. We're going to dive into some of his specialties. For sure, that I know are going to be beneficial to you, the listener. But Tom, where can they get in touch with you and learn more about you? Oh, and you also have a 506C deal. I wanted you to be able to mention it on this episode as well.
Yeah, thanks, Whitney. Yeah, so I'm Tom Dunkel. I'm Chief Investment Officer here at Belrose Storage Group. If you search for Tom Dunkel, if you Google me, which you should be doing, if you're checking me out, you'll find me all over social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and then you'll probably also find our website, belrosestoragegroup.com, BELROSE, storagegroup.com. And that's where you can see a lot of my podcast episodes, and you can also get access to our investor portal where all of our offerings are live. And that's where the documents are, et cetera. And we do have a 506C offering out there right now. It might be fully subscribed by the time this airs, but because our offerings do fill up quickly, but we've got a great deal down in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. It's just off I-95, just south of the Virginia border. And it's our 5th acquisition in the state of North Carolina. It's our 16th acquisition overall. And we're really excited about it because it's right in our wheelhouse as far as just a straightforward, plain vanilla value add deal that we've done many, many times successfully. So take a look out for that one when you reach out to learn more about me.
Thank you for being with us again today. I hope that you have learned a lot from the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I hope you're telling your friends about the Real Estate Syndication Show and how they can also build wealth in real estate. You can also go to lifebridgecapital.com and start investing today.